This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 5 minutes past seven, 21st April 2021. I'm Koo Soo Chong, joined by Philip C and Wong Shao Ning. In about a quarter of an hour, we'll talk to the heritage conservation expert, Elizabeth Cardosa, about preserving convent Bukit Nanas. But before that, markets.
Right. So in the US, second day of declines, I think taking a breather from the massive rally last week, Dow was down 0.8%, S&P down 0.7%, NASDAQ also in negative territory at minus 0.9%. But over in Asia, a mixed picture. Back home in Malaysia, up 0.5%. Hong Kong was up 0.1%, but Nikkei was down 2%. That was a pretty large drop. Shanghai flat, but down 0.1%. Singapore down 0.6%.
And of course, to break it down for us, we've got on the line with us Jeffrey Haley, the senior market analyst for Oanda. Now, Jeff, with virus cases, obviously the fourth wave is very much alive and kicking. Should investors go risk off on equities and pivot to more safe havens?
I'm not sure we're at that point yet, but it's definitely a reality now that COVID-19 cases haven't gone away. India is well telegraphed. Europe is slightly improving, but US cases are surging despite their vaccination programs. So if anything, it highlights to us just what a danger it does produce to economic activity. I think the falls we've seen in the last few days are because of an easing back of that upward momentum. As you said last week, stocks went crazy and rallied aggressively, and that's being used as an excuse for investors to take money off the table. At the end of the day, we are living in a 0% world with central banks flooding the system with liquidity still, and I expect the asset inflation story to continue all the way through 2021, although obviously it won't be a linear progression.
But Jeff, how best should an investor position his portfolio? I mean, should he relook at his asset allocation and maybe be more conservative, or is it still very much pro-equity, pro-growth?
I think we're still in pro-equity, pro-growth, to be honest. It doesn't mean that you can just buy everything willy-nilly and blindly, but certainly high-quality blue chips. I think the ASEAN markets will continue to outperform this year because they're full of these cyclical industries and what I would call non-2020 darling stocks. And as the world recovers, for example, in 2021, ASEAN will benefit from that in a greater proportion. So I'm expecting ASEAN markets to actually outperform, having underperformed in 2020. But generally, I believe that stock markets will continue moving higher to greater and lesser degrees through 2021.
But talking about ASEAN and focusing on Indonesia, the currency outlook isn't that great. The rupiah has dropped about 4% this year, the worst performer in the region after the baht. Why has the sell-off been so steep, and can it recover when Indonesia reopens?
There's a few things in play here. One of them was the central bank burden sharing, where they directly monetized some bond issues from the government. The Philippines did it as well. It's easier for developed markets to get away with that than it is for developing markets. And so that's caused some nerves, worries that there will be more of that following on. COVID-19 is an ongoing issue, of course, in Indonesia. They're suffering terribly in places like Bali with the lack of tourism, et cetera. But I think the biggest driver there was the rise earlier this year of the US dollar and the spike in US yields. Indonesia has a large amount of foreign denominated debt, both government and corporate, and that leaves Indonesia quite vulnerable to a rise in US dollars and a rise in yields. It becomes much more expensive to service that debt when both of those things go up. And I think Indonesia and India are probably the two most vulnerable countries in that sphere, and that's why their currencies have reacted the way they have.
Is that the reason also why the Jakarta Composite Index is just barely hanging on to positive gains on a year-to-date basis? Should we start re-looking at this market, which benefits usually from a super commodity cycle?
I think the good news is mostly priced in there, and the data that's been coming out of Indonesia hasn't been that bad lately. I mean, the central bank has also cut rates, and that didn't help the rupiah either. I think it's a wait-and-see proposal with Indonesia at the moment. It needs to start seeing borders reopening, more international flights, and also tourism starting to make a comeback here. I think before we can see before we can make it perhaps a longer term argument that the bottom's in place. We also have to remember that the vaccination program, although it's making quite strong progress, is going very slowly. They have 18,000 islands over 6.5 hours of time zones with nearly 300 million people that they need to vaccinate. And with these delays in the AstraZeneca, for example, these export bans, that's thrown a spanner in the works in Indonesia, as it has in other countries around Asia and Australasia and indeed the world.
Yeah, Jeff, moving to your neck of the woods down under, Reserve Bank Australia minutes have indicated that Australia is in a V-shaped recovery, which is good. But are their policies, potentially contributing to some overheating in the economy?
Yeah, definitely. As a Kiwi, and I don't blame you for not knowing the difference in the accent.
Sorry.
I give you, don't worry about it. Yeah. It's okay. You can call me an Australian if you want. So I've got a sense of humour. Look. You know, in New Zealand, we've seen like the property market go completely crazy because of these 0% interest rates and their V-shaped recovery. It's caused social tensions in the country, and the government's had to step in with property control measures. The same sort of thing is happening with the property markets, particularly in Australia as well. You know, the economy's rebounded extremely strongly, and property prices are going crazy with sort of record low mortgage rates as well. There's a background worry that the Reserve Bank will have to step in and do something there, although the politicians probably won't be too happy about that because voters own houses. So there's that side of things. Also, the JobKeeper subsidy starts to run out, I believe, in May, and it will be interesting to see if we start seeing a wave of bankruptcies or companies going to the wall after that. I sort of doubt it at the moment, but there is those nerves as well. And I think those two factors are probably holding back or weighing on Australian markets at the moment.
So oil prices have received a tailwind from loosening restrictions in the US and a pickup in Chinese demand. But do you foresee any headwinds for this commodity in the short term?
There's a couple of things here. One would be the resurgence of COVID-19 leading to renewed shutdowns in major economies around the world, dampening demand. That's definitely one side of the equation. If there's suddenly progress in these Iranian-US indirect nuclear talks as well, the specter of millions of barrels of Iranian production returning officially to international markets would also dampen those spirits as well. But looking at the charts, it's broke Brent crude broke up through 65 while I was away the last few days, and that's quite a significant technical break. And I think the markets and the oil market are signalling that the economic recovery remains well and truly on track and that will be positive, obviously, for oil. So oil itself now looks like it's going to settle into a $65 to $70 range when we're talking about Brent crude. So I think as long as this COVID-19 remains reasonably in check in developed markets, oil prices will remain well supported right through 2021.
Okay, Jeff, thanks so much for your time. That was Jeffrey Haley, the senior market analyst for Oanda. It takes a trained ear to tell the difference between a Kiwi and an Aussie, doesn't it? But it is what it is. But one thing that stood out from that conversation, chaps, is the fact that even with the fourth wave of infections, he's still very pro-growth and pro-equities, which is interesting because we've just come off one of the strongest weeks in the Dow and the S&P last week.
Chuang, money costs nothing.
Money costs 0%.
Yeah,
you know,
so that will still drive
to wind that back.
Yeah, so that will still drive money into equities. The asset allocation favors that for the moment, and I guess investors think very, very long term. Equities do outperform every other asset class. Bear in mind, every other asset class has also inched up, except maybe gold.
So, are you fully invested, Wong?
I do not comment on such things on But we have some other interesting news, and that
changing
is
changing the subject.
Changing
rapidly.
The subject. Segue. Moving on to Netflix.
Netflix.
The results came out last night, and shares fell as much as 11% in the after hours trading, because they had a large miss in subscriber numbers in its first quarter earnings report. Now, bear in mind, everybody, this was a work from home darling last year.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Netflix shares plunged according to Bloomberg. Now, the street expected Netflix to add 6 and a bit million subscribers in the first quarter. They only added 4 million. And, you know, this time last year, they added 16 million.
Yeah, but this time last year, I think practically everyone was in some form of a lockdown.
Yeah.
Right? So I mean, like, we have kind of just inched our way back into the world. I mean, we've started moving, we started going back to work some places. So
yeah, I'm wondering whether it's the going back to work scenario whether it's the emergence of competition like Disney Plus,
possibly,
or even thirdly, the lack of content coming through as production is slowing down as well. So there's so many things that might drive this lack of subscription number for Netflix as well.
It's also just the base effect, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, when you've grown to such a large number, it's going to be very difficult to keep incrementally growing at that same pace again and again. But what I do know is that Netflix is moving in terms of trying to reach out to an Asian audience. That's a growing market for them. They are also considering things like having more localized content to drive subscriber growth in these particular local markets. So that's why you see like even Malaysian shows, Singapore shows, German shows, for example, they do very well. But, you know, like you say, Philip, a lot of competition coming out from Disney Plus. Also HBO, they're not giving up their market share easily.
I mean, they did say that they expect a roughly flat customer base in North America. And the guidance is for only 1 million subscriber additions for the second quarter as well.
Okay, very quickly, this company called Kering, which is not a Malaysian company that means dry, but it's actually a luxury group that owns the brand Gucci. Now, they've had higher sales in the first quarter thanks to people with a lot of money and nowhere else to go but
Bottega
online.
Bottega Veneta also.
Bottega Veneta, you know. That's your area, isn't it, Wong?
I have to confess, yes, I have a weakness for handbags. But like rival LVMH, Kering's first quarter sales exceeded 2019 levels. Revenue stood at 3.9 billion euros, up 25% on a comparable basis from the same period last year. But then that's also due to the fact that nobody was shopping in first quarter last year.
You know, Kering, Shawning, not Kering.
Yeah, I wish Kering. I was Kering.
It's hilarious that actually you don't need, there's no difference for them if you shop in China or if you shop in Paris.
Well, the luxury companies have been trying to make the prices equal around the world.
Yep.
Because they don't want
to. A bit like the Big Mac, is it?
A bit, well, no, actually Big Mac is quite a big difference between, let's say, Malaysia and London. But the luxury companies are doing that because they don't want, at the end of the day, they own all the shops. It doesn't really matter where you buy your product, right?
Never a true word has been spoken.
No Gucci index.
No Gucci index. Okay, it is 7:17. We'll come back after this with Convent Bukit Nanas. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.